My name's Sean Collier. I'm here with Robin Hitchcock for the first time. Hi, Robin.
Hi, Sean.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm excited to be here.
I am glad to finally have you on the podcast, and we're going to talk about The Founder, and we're going to talk about Elle, and then we're just going to be movie nerds for a while, because it's that time of year. I'm forgetting this because I watched everything 2 months ago. I don't even remember The Founder, so you're leading that part of the conversation. But lots of movie stuff, and, you know, like every week, this week on You Can't Handle the Truth.
And now, it's You Can't Handle the Truth. Honest reviews of the newest movies. Part of the Epicast Network. Hear more great podcasts at epicast.tv.
It is You Can't Handle the Truth for Friday. I didn't look up the thing. January
20th.
Good job.
It's because it's inauguration day.
Oh, yeah. Is it the 20th or the 21st?
It depends on what year it is, but it's the 20th this year. It's usually the 20th.
Why do I know people who are going down for a march on the 21st?
Because the Women's March is the day after.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, and that's all we're going to say about
exactly.
That.
Let's talk about movies.
Right. So, Robin's here. Robin, I've wanted to have you on the podcast forever.
Thank you. I've wanted to be on the podcast forever.
Because, well, we'll talk more about this afterwards, but or rather, we'll talk more about this in the second half. But I'm cocky enough to, like, usually if it's like me and any other movie nerd, like privately, not in a venue like this where I'm about to do it anyway, privately I'll explain to you why my opinion is better than that other Pittsburgh movie figure.
Fair enough.
Except you're the exception to that.
Oh,
I'm
thank
like
you.
I'm smarter than everyone about movies except Robin Hitchcock, which is my legitimate opinion. Because as you've seen now repeatedly, if I don't know how to feel about a movie, I just go to you and ask you to tell me how to feel about a movie.
Even if I haven't seen it yet.
Right. Which you're never like, I can't judge. You're like, okay, give me the gist of it and I'll still tell you how to feel. And you always do a good job of that. When we spent a good 3 hours talking about Birth of a Nation, and then
which I still have not seen.
It didn't matter at all because no one saw it.
Right.
Right? Like, I was really, like, gearing up, like, this is going to be the talk of the movie world for months on end, and then it's going to come back in awards time. And then it was like, no one cares at all.
Yeah, it fizzled out.
Well, no one went to see it, which I think is a... I don't know. I still don't know exactly how to feel. It's a shame that people didn't hear that important story from American history.
Right.
It's not a shame that a big part of the reason why people didn't hear it is because the director is a gross weirdo.
Correct.
I don't know how better to say it than gross weirdo in a gentle way.
Mm-hmm.
And is that what kept you away?
That is part of what kept me away. I hesitate with violent movies.
Sure.
It's difficult for me, which I'm sure we'll talk about more.
Yeah. No, we're definitely going to get there. But I'm skipping ahead. Tell the people your movie cred, your movie resume.
I guess my primary thing is that I was a staff writer for the website BitchFlix, which is at bitchflix.com without the I. If you go to the other one, bad things will happen to you.
Okay.
FLX? No, just I think that it's without the I in bitch.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's a feminist media criticism site. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote for them for about 3 years.
And was that off of college stuff, or are you like me? You were just a movie nerd forever.
I have been a movie nerd since I was 6 years old, and my dad dragged me downstairs to watch the last 15 minutes of Casablanca.
That's how it started?
That's how it started.
I can't say how it started. Like, I can point to signposts on the way, but, like, I think I was, like, pretty normal. Like, I was one of those kids that, like, watched one movie whenever I felt like it was movie time for a year. And that, like, when I was 5, it was Wizard of Oz. And when I was 4, it was TV version, the TV staged play production of Peter Pan. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
Mary Martin?
Yeah, that's the one.
I watched that too.
Yeah, like I would just watch that every day. So like, okay. I feel like that's not being a movie nerd, that's being a normal kid.
I think the other big step for me was the AFI Top 100, the first one they did in, I think, 97. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I watched that series with my parents, and for a bunch of them, I said, oh, I've never seen that. And my dad was like, well, we've failed in your cultural education.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started watching them. He called it movie camp.
Yeah.
It was like, let's fill in the gaps.
I've still probably only seen 20 of those.
I can give you a ranking of which ones you need to see.
Okay. Which ones do I not need to see? That's the question. Which of the presumed best films of all time does no one actually needs to see them?
Oh, well, I'd have to look at the list again. I remember they had some, like, I think maybe Out of Africa is on that original list. Like, no one needs to see that. It won Best Picture, but it's a pointless movie.
A lot of things have won Best Picture.
Correct.
Yeah.
The original Birth of a Nation was on that original Top 100 list. I've never seen that.
I have not either. I've talked to people who have.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you don't actually need to. You need to know what it is.
Right.
And be able to say, yeah, well, in spite of the fact that it's not racist like when we say a contemporary movie is racist. It's an open argument for racism.
Right.
That said, it kind of invented narrative filmmaking.
Right.
So you go like, yeah, he did that, and that was an achievement. No one watch it, but yes, that is the movie that did that.
I did watch Intolerance, which was his follow-up because he felt guilty.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's fascinating. I watched that 20 years ago almost. Mm-hmm. But that is worth watching.
I do remember talking to you about, I think, like, if I have, you know, if I were forced to be like, what's the moment you knew you were a serious movie lover? I the one I would pick if I had to was being about maybe 10 or 11 years old at Disney World with my family and going on the Great Movie Ride.
I love that ride.
I know. I've talked to you about it before. It's so good.
Yeah.
And like it really, I wrote it 3 times a year ago because I was down there a year ago, and it's always possible that that's going to go away someday.
Right.
So I was like, I have to do this again and again, like with all the time I have. So I wrote it 3 times, and you do leave like liking movies more. Like even I walked out of there liking movies more, and I already like them a whole bunch.
Right.
And I remember going on it and being dazzled, and then like sitting on a Disney World bench with my dad while my mom shopped in like the 12th gift shop of the day talking about movies. And like, that's when I was like, huh, yeah, movies are the best.
It's true.
Yeah. What are we actually talking about?
We are talking about the founder.
You wrote for Bitch Flix.
Oh, me? We're talking about me still?
Sure. Why not?
So I would say the other thing that I am a Oscars nerd. For sure.
Right.
And I've done some, when I was writing for Bitch Flix, did some statistical analysis of various Oscars things, which got a little bit of attention outside of Bitch Flix. The two big discoveries I made was, one, that Best Actress nominees are less likely to appear in Best Picture nominees than Best Actor nominees.
Huh.
Yes. This has abated somewhat when they expanded back to the larger Best Picture field.
But I feel like that's true without... I feel like that's something that if I had really thought about, I might have concluded without doing the data.
I guessed it. And then I'm married to a scientist, so I like to prove it.
Oh, no, I'm glad you did, because it does always feel like there's two Best Actress nominees that no civilians have ever seen. And the movies are not nominated for anything
else. You mean every year?
Yeah.
Okay, like last year would be like 45 years.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this year will definitely be L.
That's correct.
Which we'll talk about in a little bit. But yeah, there's always like, and usually, you probably didn't take it that this far. Is there a correlation between that thing, an actress nominated for Best Actress in a movie that did not get nominated for Best Picture, and older actresses?
So that was the second analysis I did. Younger actresses tend to be nominated for Best Actress compared to male actors who tend to be older.
Right.
The youngest winner for Best Actor is still Adrian Brody, who was 29, whereas we had two 21-year-old Best Actress winners.
Mm-hmm.
And then best supporting actress, you've got the very young and the very old.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
I did this analysis and I made some pretty graphs.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And why? Okay. Hey, everyone, just listen to this episode because it's going to be lots of good stuff. Don't turn off if you really wanted to hear the founder. Don't skip ahead. Everything we say is going to be great. Just hold up because now I want to get into this.
Okay.
Why do you think, in your view, why are these two things true?
I think that the first thing is that the roles that are so strong for women that they get a Best Actress nomination are in they're in stories that are considered less important.
Hmm.
So, you know, Blue Jasmine and Still Alice, they're both just looking at women.
Yeah.
And Elle is dealing with a very gendered story. And then you see these male stories are considered universal.
Mm-hmm.
It's sexism and the patriarchy is the short answer.
Right, of course. Yeah. I mean, that's usually the answer.
Right.
But it's, and by the way, a big part of the reason why I'm so mad that Eddie Redmayne won, aside from that movie being terrible and him doing a bad job in it.
So I actually thought that that movie was decent, and I thought it was Felicity Jones's character's story. I mean, it's based on, I can't remember her name, but it's based on her memoir.
Right.
And I thought she was fantastic. I don't think that she necessarily should have won. But I think it's bananas that Eddie Redmayne was the winner and got most of the attention when it was her story.
Well, and over Michael Keaton. See, here's how we'll segue.
Okay.
But I've known that's the male part of that is an established thing that usually old men get best
Correct.
Actors. And in even like in the case of DiCaprio, it almost became a thing like he's not old enough to get it
exactly.
yet. And when Michael Keaton was so great and that role was kind of the distillation of his entire existence as an actor.
Correct.
And it's like, this is the year you randomly give it to a young guy?
Right.
For that guy?
And then I also thought that Michael Keaton carried that movie and
right.
Birdman won Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been so much less impressive of a film with any other actor I can think of.
Really? And even a great actor. Like,
yeah.
That could have been Daniel Day-Lewis, and I would have cared about it less.
I agree.
And I'm turning around on Eddie Redmayne now because, like, 30% because Fantastic Beasts was really charming.
Okay.
And 70% because, no, he really was that good in The Danish Girl.
See, I have a bigger problem with The Danish Girl because I'm tired of cis actors being hired to play trans characters.
Oh, there's a topic.
Yeah.
This is going to be a 7-hour podcast. What? No, we're not because I'll explain later, but because I'm immediately going, after we're done here, I'm immediately going to make up my mind of how I feel about David Cronenberg.
That's exciting.
But we'll talk about that
okay.
later. Yeah, that's okay. Expound. Because, I mean, that makes a lot of sense, but
About cis actors?
Yeah.
So I think that I'm cis, and I think that this has been a problem that people have been complaining about for years
yeah.
in the feminist and trans communities, and it just felt like last year it was like, it's 2016,
mm-hmm.
or it was 2015, I guess, when that movie came out, and we're still doing this.
Yeah, that's true.
And right after Jared Leto won for Dallas Buyers Club.
Oh, that's true.
Which I found to be an overrated performance.
I just found that to be a completely forgettable movie.
I thought
like
that Matthew
fine.
McConaughey was great.
Yeah. Yeah. Did he? Is that the
he
thing?
He won. Mm-hmm.
I couldn't remember which bit of the McConaissance was the actor, the award part.
Right.
But no, yeah, that's an excellent point. I mean, like, if we can go into a vacuum, I do think Eddie Redmayne did a great job.
Right.
Like, objectively.
I think Alicia Vikander was fantastic and
yeah.
deserved to win.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that her winning is part of the very young or very old
right.
pattern for Best Supporting Actress.
Mm-hmm.
And I said last year it was Best New Actress I Want to Fuck.
Okay.
Am I allowed to swear on this podcast?
You absolutely
okay.
are. Thank Addie Twigg. Because we were clean for like 8 episodes, and then I forgot to warn Addie, and she
okay.
swore all over the place, and it's like, right. well, we're dirty now.
I'll try to keep it to a minimum.
Yeah. I mean, yes, Alicia Vikander is very, very attractive. And, well, who else was nominated last year?
Rooney Mara in Category Fraud. She should have been nominated for Best Actress for Carol.
Oh, yeah.
And it bothers me that I don't know this right offhand. Like, oh, Jennifer Jason Leigh for Hateful Eight?
Oh, that was my vote. She was great. That's not your kind of film.
I have not seen that one.
Okay.
There were two movies in the major categories I missed last year, Joy and The Hateful Eight.
Joy, don't feel bad about missing.
That's my understanding.
The Hateful Eight, most people I would say feel bad about missing, but if you don't want to saddle up for 3 hours of violence, then definitely skip The Hateful Eight.
If I could have seen it in the native format, once it left theaters around here in the native format, I was kind of like, I don't need to see this.
It was great. That was very cool to see something that looked different and had an overture and had an intermission.
Right.
That was really cool. I liked it a lot because I like Tarantino. This is, hey, sometime we're going to talk about The Founder now, I promise. But, okay, so this is kind of what I wanted to get into later, but the hell with it. Can we talk about me getting drunkenly mad at you at the Oscar party?
Yes.
Am I uninvited as a direct result of
Absolutely
that?
Absolutely not.
Okay. I can still come to the Oscars this year?
Of course.
So, yeah, because that's the year we're talking about, you hated The Revenant.
That is correct.
Right. And you at last year's Oscar party were just on a mad train of how bad The Revenant was.
Yes, that is correct.
And when I got pretty drunk, eventually made some comment about, like, I'm a movie guy too, and I liked it, so come on now.
Here's the thing.
Right.
The Revenant
Which
was
I apologize
beautiful.
For. That had more to do with alcohol.
That is okay.
I was just like, because I was eventually felt like, well, why does she not like the thing I like? Is there something wrong with my opinion? And then I got insecure and tried to defend it drunkenly.
Everyone is allowed to like different movies.
Right.
That's part of why we love the movies.
Yeah. If we didn't, we wouldn't have to do this show.
Exactly.
If that wasn't the case, there would be one critic.
Yeah.
Right.
There used to be.
Yeah.
After Gene Siskel dies, before Roger Ebert died, there was just one critic and everyone else was superfluous.
Right. Anyway, so now, why did you hate The Revenant?
Hate is a strong word.
Okay.
I did not like watching it. I found it tedious.
Mm-hmm.
And I did think it was beautiful. I was incredibly impressed. The shot of the horse falling off the cliff will stay with me forever. That was a just breathtaking moment.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I found it just unpleasant.
Okay.
Unpleasant to watch. And I the only reason that I saw it was that I was doing the Oscars death race, which is when you try to see every nominated movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the last one I watched. I watched it the weekend of the ceremony, and I just wanted to leave the entire time.
It's a good thing that Aaron doesn't listen to this show that he's on at all, because I'm about to like come around a little bit on The Revenant, which I feel really bad about. And when I made my list last year, I think I had it at like 3, with another movie you hate, Anomalisa, at number 1.
Right.
But in retrospect, I totally get that, because I'm just such a sucker for Westerns and like really basic grinding revenge plots.
So I was
really primed to like it. But like, if it were like The Revenant's coming back to theaters, I wouldn't go see it, because like, I was like, I've watched it twice and there's a lot of like, man, that makes me feel cold and uncomfortable just looking at it in that movie.
Right. I had an essay in me, which I never wrote, comparing The Revenant and Room, which might have been my favorite movie last year, as survival stories.
Yeah.
And The Revenant is a super masculine survival story.
Yeah.
And it's something that most men today will never face.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas hopefully most women will never face being held captive for 7 years.
Sure.
But it is tied into abuse that is unfortunately common.
Yeah, there's a universal emotional element to the story in Room.
Exactly.
Right.
Whereas I felt like Revenant's popularity was partially men wishing for a simpler time where they could fight a bear.
Right. I mean, that's not why I'm into it, because I'm obsessed with Inuritu's direction.
It's beautiful.
And the cinematography. I shouldn't forget his name. He won 3 years in a row for three different styles.
Leibowitz, something like that.
He won for Gravity, Birdman, and The Revenant in consecutive years.
I think you're right.
At some point I'll get to his name. But I think it is definitely true that it's what I said that about something this year. I said that about Arrival this year. That in the moment it's really easy to go, this is the kind of movie I like most, therefore it's one of the best movies.
100%.
And a year later it's like, well, maybe The Revenant wasn't that great. Like, now I don't know if The Revenant was better than Hateful Eight to, like, make a close comparison. And I definitely, on last year's best of, had Revenant above Fury Road. And there's no way The Revenant is better than Fury Road.
Correct.
So I'm sorry I got angry at the Oscars. Feeling movie insecure.
It's a good kind of disagreement.
Right.
I like it.
Right. But this is kind of my big question for you. Really, The Founder and Elle, sometime going to happen. My big question for you, having written for a feminist movie site, and most of the conversations I have with you are related to sociological issues as they intersect with movies. Is that a fair way to describe it?
I think that's a great way to describe it.
Do you feel that you can only, like, how encompassing is that lens to your enjoyment of films at this point?
Is a great question. There are times that I completely turn it off.
Yeah.
And then it will be later on I sort of rethink parts of it. And when you say that's my favorite kind of movie, honestly, my favorite kind of movie is kind of popcorny action movies. I love Marvel movies.
Yeah.
Colin and I just watched, that's my husband, just watched Central Intelligence with Kevin Hart and The Rock.
Yeah.
And I just adored it.
Like, really?
It's a silly little movie, and I was so happy the entire time I was watching it.
I feel like everyone, of the 15 mid-level R-rated comedies that come out every year, everyone picks two and was like, hey, that one was actually pretty good. And Central Intelligence is a fine choice for that.
Right.
That's my Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates.
I enjoyed that movie,
too. Yeah, that was fine.
So, and, you know, that has terrible gender stuff going on.
Sure.
In there are times I can shut it off.
Yeah.
And there were times that I'd see movies for the purpose of reviewing them for BitchFlix and have to think really hard before I could take that gendered lens to it.
Right.
Yeah.
But Emmanuel Lubezki is the cinematographer we were looking for. The trouble I have, and like I say this a lot, and this is why I go to you for serious movie thoughts. I have to. Do you hear a rumbling?
I do.
Is that my phone? It so was. I have to limit the amount of time I allow myself to consider, because it's seriously consider most of those issues, particularly race and gender, because I feel like if I applied rigorous standards to everything I see, I would never recommend a movie, or almost never recommend a movie. Particularly, and this is important, is I'm like, my job is to be a fairly populist movie reviewer,
right,
not a film critic. And I wouldn't, they wouldn't keep it, like, they wouldn't keep having me on the radio if Room was the only movie I ever recommended.
Correct.
If like out of 20 movies, I'm like, 18 of these bothered me on racial or gender grounds.
Sure.
Therefore, so I feel like a while ago I started setting the standard, like, did this movie try? Like, not did it succeed, but did it seem to try a little bit to not be awful? And if it passes that, I'll just review it neutrally. But
fair
if I'm
enough.
Like, this didn't even try, then I'm going to go in.
Try
like
to
when
be
it's
a good
passengers.
Movie or try to be socially conscious?
Try to be socially conscious.
Okay.
That's what I mean. If it's you know, well, there are these problems and they're problems, but, you know, it looks like it was acting like it wanted to be inclusive or non-discriminatory or not offensive. So for the purposes of a quick movie review on Facebook and talking about it for 2 minutes on the radio, I'm just going to play it straight.
I think that's completely fair.
And then when it's like, okay, this didn't try at all, that's when it's Passengers. When it's Passengers. You didn't.
Oh, I will never watch Passengers.
Good. Yeah. Good move.
They have a Twitter ad running right now where it says the ultimate date movie.
The ultimate date rape movie.
Correct.
Passengers. I've ranted about this enough in many, many sources. But that was a case where I missed the screening. I forget why. And they screened it very late. Like, often if it's, like, they screened that Monday night for, like, a Wednesday release.
And is that a bad sign?
Well, I mean, there's so much that just doesn't get screened in Pittsburgh.
Right.
Like, in L.A. and New York, most things get critic screenings. If they don't, it's really bad.
Okay.
In Pittsburgh, there's many more things that some of them, because they don't care, some of them, just out of convenience, don't get screenings. Usually, if we have one, like, on Thursday night before a Friday release, that does mean, like, you know,
trouble.
They know that the papers won't have time to get it into the early edition. So
right.
I missed the screening, and then I saw your Frankly Scarlet cohort, Liz Labaz, share some of the first angry articles about it. And I went, oh no, I have to see it now.
So sometimes you see movies out of like you want to see how terrible it is.
No, that's more of a case of, like, I feel an obligation to protect others from this film.
Oh.
Right?
Oh, that's really interesting.
Like, when it's something like that, it's like, if this is as bad as it's supposed to be, I want to, and not just bad, not bad like, you know, Ice Age 5 was bad. Bad like Passengers in terms of, like, this is fucked up.
Yes.
Then I'm like, maybe if I see this and loudly explain how awful it is and why and kind of spoil it publicly,
yeah,
I'll keep a few more people away from going at all.
Right. Public service.
Right. Right. That's the difference between how you approach and how I do. I think is I'm basically just providing a public service.
Right.
I'm basically just going, there's only so much money and time the average person who doesn't see 7 movies a week has to spend on movies. Let me try to point you towards the one that's going to be most satisfying for your time.
Right.
And you would describe what you do, how, or what you did when you were writing for BitchFlix.
Oh, that's a great question. I feel like there continues to be, first of all, there are not enough female film critics.
Yeah.
And so,
sorry, I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
Yeah.
So I like just adding one more female voice.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing was just providing a little bit more conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so much, and I love this. I love when people talk about the cinematography and
right.
talk about the experience. But saying, but there's also this. There's mm-hmm. also this gender lens and,
mm-hmm.
and general social justice lens.
Yeah.
So I think that that's what I was doing.
Yeah. Why'd you stop?
A few reasons. Mm-hmm. I think that the main one was that I got a day job, and
yeah, that'll yeah, often interfere.
Correct. So, and you know, when I lived in South Africa for most of the time that I was mm-hmm. writing for BitchFlix, and I could just go to the movies at 10 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
and then spend the rest of the day writing my essay about it.
Right.
So I missed that scenario,
mm-hmm.
and it's complicated. The other,
yeah,
I mean.
But that's enough of a reason.
Yeah,
absolutely. But I hope that that at some point you end up writing regularly again.
Me too.
Because, like I said, you're the only person I trust more than me when
oh,
it comes
so
to
sweet.
Movies. So, well, in Pittsburgh, like there's probably
right.
some critics. I don't. Do you do this? I like this is shameful. I don't really read a lot of reviews because, like, I want to not have my opinion sullied. Like not, but like. I mean before the fact.
Oh, like, I don't like reading, unless it's something like Passengers where I make the decision, I'm never going to see this.
Right.
If I want to see a movie, I want to see it without reading reviews.
Right.
And then I tend to write some notes about mm-hmm. my own thoughts, and then I go read all the reviews.
I had a lot of people, like the first time I take them to a screening, they're like, do you take notes or do you? And the answer is, I stopped myself because then I had more thoughts than I could use.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because I mean, DVE is my primary outlet.
Right.
This is different because when we're doing one of these, it's immediately after, right. usually immediately after we watch the movie, so I can kind of remember everything. But DVE is my primary outlet. At the most, I might have 3 or 4 minutes to talk about a movie, mm-hmm. and some of that just has to be being funny about the movie.
Right.
So when I was writing down notes throughout a thing, then I would be like, oh, I got to make this one point about the second act where she goes to the – and that's completely useless for right. what I'm doing. So I had to, like, make myself have fewer thoughts.
I do take notes when I'm mm-hmm. planning on writing about a movie.
Yeah. So what's the point? The point is I hope you write stuff again soon.
Yes.
I guess we should take a break and then do what we're here to do. Maybe I'll have Buzzy switch these. I don't know. But no, we'll just let it happen.
Okay.
That was extra butter. The actual topic is coming up next. But I want to give programming notes. So here's what's going to happen. Today is the 20th. Next week, I am on vacation, and I think Aaron is still on vacation. So here's what we're going to do. Two things. Well, one thing, but with two parts. I'm going to put out a bonus episode Monday, the 23rd. And that is going to be two things. It's all going to be me alone. Hi, sorry, thank you. But it's going to be, I'm going to do like a bonus episode style review of Split, the M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Oh, I didn't know that was his.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only reason I'm aware of it is, again, Twitter advertisements.
Yeah, that's, did you miss the controversy on this one?
No.
The pre-boycott that hit this particular one?
Yes, I did miss it.
His previous movie, go back and listen to that episode, everyone, okay. where Aaron and I, like, lost our minds saying, not only is this terrible, this is, I think that's the worst movie I've ever reviewed.
Oh.
It's not the worst movie I've ever seen, but, like, the worst movie I ever sat down to give an opinion of.
Which movie is
The Visit by M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh.
Which is where two kids get dropped off at their grandparents, and their grandparents turn out to be crazy, violent murderers because dementia. Like, it's literally
no,
like,
thank you.
Avoid old people, they might kill you, is the theme of this movie.
That's terrible.
And it ends with, like, a YouTube video of the kid rapping about his ordeal. It's like,
no.
What? No. Oh, it's so bad.
Okay.
And then it got reviews like, he's back. Like, no, he's not. This is worse. This is worse than The Happening. With Split, it's a serial killer, or no, just a kidnapper. There's women in a bunker because he has multiple personality disorder.
Oh, that sounds like a recipe for insensitivity.
Right. Including the flap when the trailer came out was the big, like, scary reveal was... It's an actress, a young actress I love, Anya Taylor-Joy from The Witch and,
oh, sure.
And Morgan, who's fantastic, and I'm so angry that she's in this, but, you know, good, get money, I guess. But so she's being held captive by this guy, and then she hears a female voice and goes, oh my God, help me, he's got me trapped here thinking it's her savior. And then the door opens and it's one of his other personalities who's
nope.
a woman in a dress.
Nope.
And it's like, look scary, a man dressed as a woman. It's like, no, you don't get to do that anymore. You don't get to look at the creepy crossdresser. No, no,
nope.
That's done. All right, so this has been pre-ranting about a movie I haven't seen yet. Maybe it'll be good. It won't. So that's going to be the first half of the bonus episode. The second half, I'm leaving here as we record this. And going to Row House because my girlfriend, Mary Beth, who's in your improv class,
that's correct.
By the way.
Robin, the class I'm teaching.
Right. Plug that because, yeah, obviously.
Yeah, I teach at the Arcade Comedy Theater, which you probably have people plug on this show all the time.
Constantly.
Yep. And I teach Improv 101. You should definitely take a class there. Our next session starts in March.
I might be about to do that.
You should definitely do it.
Abby is finally... Abby is just breaking me down
yeah.
semester by semester until I give in. But what was the point there? Arcade? Oh, Mary Beth wants to go see Videodrome.
Fun.
Which I have not seen. And I was like, I don't know if I have an opinion on Cronenberg. And I looked at the IMDb. All I've seen is The Fly and three of the like 21st century ones.
I haven't like, seen those.
Eastern Promises and History and Violence... Which and both of those I'm completely neutral on. Like both of those are like that was a movie, and Maps to the Stars, which was real bad, And The Fly I like, but like that's random enough information that I don't have an opinion.
Okay.
So I'm going to go see Videodrome, and if I love it, I'm going to stay at the theater until I stop loving things. Because it's
are they doing a festival?
It's Cronenberg Week.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So they're so it's Videodrome and then Scanners, and then Crash. Not Best Picture winner Crash, but Crash, a movie about car crash fetishists. This is a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to see how much Cronenberg I want to have today.
Okay.
Do you have an opinion?
I love The Fly. That's a fantastic movie. Videodrome, I think, is really beautifully representative of a certain subgenre.
Okay.
Which is kind of defined by Cronenberg.
Being body horror?
Yeah.
I'm really uncomfortable with that. So
I am normally, but there I get in certain moods where, I mean, I love The Fly. I love The Thing. So there are certain movies that are just gross that I get in a mood for.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like that early Peter Jackson thing? It's like constant volcanoes of blood.
I have not seen that. I've seen some clips of it.
Dead Alive is the interesting one, which is sometimes called Brain Dead, which is just such wacky, over-the-top, cartoonish, but real-life, like, zombie, insane grossness that, like, you're in half an hour in, you're completely desensitized to violence.
Right.
But anyway, so on this bonus episode, I'm going to review Split and say whether or not I like Cronenberg movies. That's coming out on Monday, and then we won't have an episode next Friday. Cool, cool. Hey, before we go to the break, during the break, you're going to hear a message from the Epicast Network. If you would like to start your podcast, whether that is something you want to share with the world, something that's an internal thing for your work or for your friends, basically, if you have audio to be produced at any time, check out the Epicast Network. Go to epicastnetwork.com/services. See what they can do for you. If you're having live events, they can do the audio. They can take photographs. Check out one of the Drinking Partners shows sometime to see what a great job Epicast does in all aspects of production, particularly if you're thinking about starting a podcast. Robin, why don't you have a podcast?
So I actually do have a podcast in the works.
Oh, is this the
Theronathon?
Yeah,
we'll
that's
be looking
be good.
At the filmography of Charlize Theron.
Like everyone?
Everyone.
Aeon Flux?
Okay. We did watch Children of the Corn 3.
Oh.
Yeah. So
I didn't know. Yeah. That's
I don't actually know if she speaks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there one of those in every horror franchise that randomly has a bunch of people that were famous later?
Yes.
Because Texas Chainsaw has that one with Matthew McConaughey and Renee Zellweger.
Okay.
Nightmare on Elm Street has that one with Patricia Arquette and Lawrence Fishburne.
Okay.
Children of the Corn. Friday the 13th, the original, has Kevin Bacon. That's enough.
Leprechaun has Jennifer Aniston, pre-Friends.
Right. Now I'm trying to go to Halloween. Because we can't just say Jamie Lee Curtis. Like, the Halloween might be the exception to this rule. Anyway, what was I talking about? Epicastnetwork.com/services. You know you wanted to start a podcast. You've been talking about it for years. I know that's true because literally every person I know is talking about starting a podcast. You want to separate yourself from the pack? Get Epicast to help you. Speaking of Epicast, we'll be back after this word from the Epicast Network.
Hey guys, this is Marta from Marta on the Move. I hope you're enjoying this podcast. When you're done with this one, you should go check out mine on www.martaonthemove.com. On the Epicast Network, you can find me on Twitter at @ICan'tFindMarta. If you like interesting people and places in Pittsburgh, food and drink, travel advice, and general nerdery, check it out and keep it moving.
And we're back. Before we do this, Robin, where will you be appearing in the near future?
Oh, I actually don't know, other than I'm periodically there at Bonus Stage at the Arcade Comedy Theater.
Which is Sunday
nights at 7.
Yeah.
Yeah, with my house team in Another Castle.
What does In Another Castle have any other dates coming up?
I should know this. I mean, day we're recording, which is before this will air, today we are performing.
Okay.
Yeah. We're there twice a month.
This is what happens when I have improvisers on. Like, when it's a stand-up,
they're
like, oh, on the 21st, on the 22nd, on the 28th, like, everything. Improvisers are like, I'm on a team. We do things.
Yeah.
Just, you know, go to places where improv is, and we might be there.
That is exactly what I am saying.
Yes. But is there a Facebook for In Another Castle?
There is.
Okay. Yeah. Follow In Another Castle on Facebook. Do you post your shows on that Facebook?
I honestly don't know. I don't manage it. Are we plugging things? You should just follow me on Twitter.
Yes.
Yeah. Hitch Died. HITCHDIED.
It is so one of my favorite Twitters that you are always in the while you were away role.
Oh, thank
like
you.
Like every time it starts with what something you said 12 hours ago.
Thank you, Twitter algorithm.
And I want to like, do I jump in on this dead conversation? Often,
always.
Yes. I will be at Arcade Comedy Theater. See how this works? Tomorrow night, and this is a big one, because tomorrow night at 8 p.m., I will be performing with my dad, Gene Collier.
Oh, that's right.
It's another Collier and Collier show at Arcade Comedy Theater. We do this like twice a year. It's always great. Suzanne Lawrence is going to be with us as well. If you haven't seen me, whatever. But if you haven't seen my dad, he's fantastic. And he's, you know, getting sleepier and sleepier all the time. So who knows how many more times he's going to feel like leaving the house to do this. So come to Arcade tomorrow night. That's the 21st at 8 p.m. I will also be on the 10 p.m. show, the No Relation to Dick Clark comedy show.
Correct.
Because Jason Clark, who you know from the Grown Dad Business podcast and from the stand-up Get Down, is hosting his own stand-up show for the first time, I believe.
Is he?
So definitely go to Arcade tomorrow night, the 21st, if you're in the Pittsburgh area. I will also be, what's the next thing? Is back at Arcade. I'll be back at Arcade February 10th for the stand-up Get Down at 10 p.m. And the next night, February 11th, is the first WDVE Loaded show of the year at Club Cafe. Tickets for that are at clubcafelive.com. Tickets for all Arcade things are at arcadecomedytheater.com. And hey, if you like us and you hear all this stuff, I'll let Robin sell this better than I can. If you like us and you hear all this stuff we plug at Arcade constantly, and you haven't been able to get out, or maybe you don't live here, but you like what we do and want to just kick some money a good way, here's Robin Hitchcock to tell you where you can give some money.
Well, we have really exciting stuff going on at the Arcade. We have the Arcade Upgrade. Arcade Comedy Theater is moving to a new permanent home with two stages and many more seats. And we are fundraising so that we can make it as awesome as possible. So if you go to arcadecomedytheater.org, I believe.
That sounds right.
It will show you how you can contribute.
Which is, by the way, going great so far.
Yes.
I was really impressed with the number of people who've donated already, but it takes a lot of money to move to a new theater.
Yeah.
And as great as the scene is here, this is something that Pittsburgh deserves and needs.
Correct.
Is this permanent space for comedy. So if you've got $5, $10, $4,000, whatever it might be.
Everything helps.
It is arcadecomedytheater.org. We'll get you to the place where you can donate a little bit. And we'll all really appreciate it. And there, you know, I'm sure movie themed things will happen there.
100%.
The
last
soon.
Time I was on a podcast, it was a live recording at Arcade.
Who was telling me there needs to be like, frankly, Scarlett, You Can't Handle the Truth dual live riff movie nights?
Probably Liz. That's a fantastic idea.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Yeah, we're going to make that happen.
Okay.
And you're now the second third of Frankly Scarlett to appear. Abby was on sometime. I wasn't there that week. But Liz basically just informed me that when we see Wonder Woman, Frankly Scarlett collectively will be the guest.
Yes.
So that's coming up. She also was trying to sell me on Frankly Scarlett should be the guest on Furious 8.
Liz loves the Fast and Furious.
I think
movies.
She just really wants to make sure that she gets to see Furious 8.
That's completely
early.
Fair.
No, really, the founder. Okay.
Okay.
So I'm going to let you lead this discussion.
Okay.
Only because I saw the founder like 7 weeks ago.
All right.
And I can say things about it, but not nearly as much as you can if you saw it a week ago.
So for people who don't know, the founder is about Ray Kroc, I think his first name is, who became the driving force behind the franchise of McDonald's.
Right.
But we also see the dark side, which is how he essentially screwed over the actual McDonald's.
Yeah, there are two guys named McDonald.
Yeah.
I don't even think I knew that going into
I knew
this movie.
The broad strokes of this story from the book Fast Food Nation.
Okay.
And they basically talk about how McDonald's invented having homogenous restaurants.
Right.
Right. So, you know, there were fast food joints, but they weren't franchised so that each one was identical. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of the innovation that the McDonald's came up with. And then Ray Kroc created the empire. Mm-hmm. And he did it through a bunch of shady business practices, which we see here.
Right.
And it's interesting. I both think that this movie is really old-fashioned. It kind of feels like a movie from 10 years ago and very much part of the current zeitgeist of Trump's America.
Mm-hmm.
And it's there are no people of color with speaking roles. And the ostensible hero is a ruthless businessman who is not admirable in any way.
I felt that this was almost making the same point that Whiplash made, albeit in a much different way. Where how do you feel about Whiplash?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was just gripping.
Yeah.
I thought it was yet another in a stream of movies about male greatness, and I'm tired of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. but I felt like that was, it's definitely about greatness, and yes, male greatness, but I felt like the message, I had a big argument with I've got a brilliant uncle who hated the shit out of Whiplash.
Okay.
And he just thought it was like an ode to, you know, monstrous behavior. I took away from Whiplash it was essentially saying there are different ways to become really good at a thing.
Right.
One of them is to destroy your soul. It works pretty quick, but you have to destroy your soul.
Yep.
And The Founder to me is a movie that says like, hey, being a huge asshole kind of works a lot of the time. Like, here's this story. And we're going to present it like it's any great American biopic.
Exactly.
And we're going to include in there, this guy is a total asshole. We're correct. Not going to shy away from the fact that Ray Kroc was a dick who screwed everyone over. But hey, look, that totally worked for him, like gangbusters.
Correct.
Which is interesting. I don't know how necessary it is, but okay.
That's right. I mean, it reminded me a little bit of The Wolf of Wall Street. Okay. It's like a family-friendly adaptation of that story.
Sure.
But he never even has the temporary downfall that we saw in that movie. But it's just, you know, bad guy makes a lot of money.
Yeah. I guess I like that. This is not like a hero worship movie. This isn't like,
no.
What a visionary. This isn't Steve Jobs. This isn't like what a visionary Ray Kroc was. This is the story of how an asshole won. And that's the thing I liked most about it, that it didn't shy away from that, that it was willing to have a completely unlikable and even unsupported protagonist.
Okay.
And when I got out of it, I was like, there were good performances. I was interested throughout. That was a good enough movie, and I did forget it almost immediately.
It was, I would say, good enough is a great way to describe it. I will say my husband loved it.
Really?
He was so drawn in a way where I kind of was like, what actually? Because it's fine. It is a fine movie, but I couldn't. He was so engaged with it. I think maybe, you know, he comes from a small business family, mm-hmm. and I think that he kind of connected to that part of the story in a way that I did not.
And those characters, the Dick and Mac McDonald, played by Nick Offerman and John Carroll Lynch, were really relatable and compelling, and it was really easy to feel for them.
A different movie, they would have been the heroes. They would have been the central characters.
Yes.
Like Tucker, A Man in His Dream. Do you remember that one from the 90s?
What's that?
It's Jeff Bridges as, I can't remember his first name, but a guy named Tucker who was a car designer. And his ideas were dismissed and or stolen. Mm-hmm. And so it's a noble businessman who fails.
Oh, like that thing that no human being saw about with Greg Kinnear about intermittent wiper blades?
Correct.
Did
exactly
you see that?
Like that. No.
No.
I don't know people. That it exists.
No people. Stroke of genius. It had even had
That's
a pun
adorable.
Name.
Adorable.
It was about the guy who figured out how to make your windshield wipers not keep going, but pause in between.
Huh.
That was a whole movie.
Wow.
Yeah, because okay. He had to fight with Ford or somebody where they just wanted to steal it, and he went to the mat, and I assume he got money? I don't even know, because no one saw that movie. Anyway, they were great. Man, Laura Dern gets wasted a whole lot in a whole lot of movies, doesn't she?
She is so much better than that.
Mm-hmm.
And so she is his first wife who is ignored.
Yeah.
And then he leaves her for who appears to be a much younger model, but actually Linda Cardellini is only 8 years younger than Laura Dern.
Really?
Yeah. It's just interesting because Laura Dern was an adult in movies when I was a child.
Right.
And Linda Cardellini was a teenager in movies when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
So I was very surprised.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that as well. Well, and Laura Dern is kind of, which I love, is kind of like, I don't give a shit aging. She's just...
That is 100% correct.
She's just like embracing like, yeah, I'm just looking like exactly what my age is and nothing different. Whereas that's sadly an anomaly in Hollywood.
Right.
But anyway, she's wasted in this movie.
Correct.
Which... It's almost redundant to be like, yes, the movie about the founding of McDonald's does not have a strong female element. But to be clear, it doesn't.
And there's this, you know, they do the what happened to them after the film.
Mm-hmm.
And his secretary / accountant apparently was like the first woman to trade on the stock exchange floor.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, became like co-CEO of McDonald's International.
Mm-hmm.
And I immediately had the reaction, why isn't the movie about her?
Yeah. It's an interesting movie. There's nothing wrong with it. And Michael Keaton's great, by the way.
He's great.
It was really interesting to see his charm used
turned evil.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was really cool. But this is absolutely nothing that people need to... Oh, you need to go out this weekend and see The Founder.
Definitely not.
And I think that's why it's one of those things that disappeared from the awards conversation.
Correct.
Which is... Man, I want to... If I ever abandon this podcast idea and want to make a podcast that no one will ever listen to, it'll be movies that people talked about for awards but never actually got nominated
for
everything.
There is a fantastic Tumblr called This Had Oscar Buzz.
Wow.
Yes.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yes. Check that out. It's Joe, I don't remember his last name, formerly of Extra Hot Great.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's because especially as someone who gets all the screeners – I watch so many every year that it's like, well, they're kind of angling for, like, there's probably, I probably watch 40 movies a year like that.
Right.
That it's like, consider this for, and I watch it, and literally the only thought I ever give it is, nope. Because it's like drowned, like, there's not even any point, and something like, what's a good example? The Founder is actually a great example, but there's a better one. Like, Miss Sloan.
Mm-hmm.
Miss Sloan, by the way, already came out and went.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like, wow.
That played in theaters here at one point. And if you haven't heard of it, like everyone else, it was a movie where Jessica Chastain played a lobbyist who switched sides, and it was, you know, kind of a Washington intrigue thing.
She did get a Golden Globe nomination.
She did. That's true. But it's like there's so many movies every year that exist to be like, people were talking about this, and then people saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And The Founder is one of those where at some point like last May, it was like, oh, Michael Keaton's going to get his Oscar for this Founder movie. And then you see it. No,
not yet.
Definitely not.
You know what it is? It is a watch on an airplane movie.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It is 100%. It will divert your attention for 2 hours and then disappear from your mind.
If this ends up on Netflix and you're in the throes of like, you can't decide what to watch on Netflix.
Sure.
You could make this your compromise pick.
Yep.
And that'll be fine. So that was a movie that we don't have strong feelings about. I'd still, like, we go 1 to 10 when I remember to do it, and I think this is like a 7.
I was going
to
go 6.
Sure.
Yeah.
Which to me, and I'm, unlike a lot of people, like, this is, yeah, everyone cares about how numbers happen, right? A lot of people, like, say 5 is like, okay. I'm like, no, 5 is the neutral film, right?
Right.
5 is neither good nor bad, like completely indifferent. Anything below 5 is actively bad. Everything above 5 is actively good.
Okay.
So 7 means like Six means barely good, right?
That's exactly what it was.
And seven means slightly more than... Seven means garden variety good, but I would never tell anyone, go out and see it. That's
right.
That's how the founder is. I bet you we have more to say about L.
That's true. I have a lot to say about L.
And again, I'm just going to let you go because it has been a while since I've seen this. I feel like I've been thinking about it a lot more. If you haven't heard of this at all, it's just expanding everywhere this week and last week. It hit a lot of theaters. But you probably saw, if you watched the Golden Globes, you saw Isabelle Huppert, who's an incredibly talented actress, win Best Actress for L. In a little bit of an upset. Like, this was supposed to be Natalie Portman wins everything all year, I think.
I think that Jackie is one of those movies that got a lot of early buzz and is going to kind of disappear from...
Have you seen it?
I have not.
Okay.
I do think she'll be nominated.
Right.
I don't think that it's a movie that a lot of people are going to see. It's going to be a 45 years kind of movie where the nerds go see it.
I loved it. It was my number five for the year. And she's great in it, but yeah, it's not really catching on. So, but she was maybe, and Emma Stone has a lot of that buzz.
I know it was considered an upset. I think that Isabelle Huppert is going to win the Oscar.
I'm starting to hear that. Like, I'm starting to hear that there's enough, like, not enough people have seen Jackie. Correctly, people are going, La La Land, like, Emma Stone isn't the great thing about La La Land.
Right.
Have you seen La La Land yet?
I have not.
Okay. We'll come back and do a bonus episode at the end of Oscar. In fact, I'm just going to say right now, just show up on our Oscar preview episode.
Okay, fantastic.
Because you're like you said, you're an Oscar obsessive.
Huge Oscar nerd.
But so that's why Elle is worth talking about, because it might be a Best Actress winner this year. And it's a tough nut to crack. In thinking about it,
yeah.
I think. The basic premise, and I want to do this without really spoiling much of anything, is it opens with a woman being raped. The first scene is someone breaking into her house and raping her. And what's the spoiler-free way to say what the movie's about? The movie's kind of about her not having the expected response to that.
That's a very... correct yet vague way to describe it.
Right. I'll let you take it because you watched this pretty recently.
Yes, I watched it last week. First of all, it's a French film. It's in French.
Yeah.
And the first act, she is just numb to it. I think the scene following the attack, she orders sushi on the phone.
Yeah.
And there were certain things that were so graphic that you don't normally see in these stories. One thing I'll say is that I was not interested in seeing this movie. I agreed to see it to be on this podcast, and I am very glad I watched it.
Okay.
I don't want to say I enjoyed it because it's so difficult.
Right.
But it has stuck with me.
Oh, by the way, we're skipping the relevant, certainly to our listeners, whoever you are, and many people. This is a Paul Verhoeven movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know, RoboCop, Total Recall, Basic Instinct, Showgirls, Paul Verhoeven now does stuff like this. I didn't even know that that's what was happening in
Neither
his life.
Neither did I. I did not know it was Paul Verhoeven when I was watching it.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, huh.
Right.
Yeah.
You didn't want to see it because you would. That was the first thing you heard, is that it has...
I just knew it had graphic rape in
right,
it.
Right, right.
And I feel, like I said, I have difficulties with violent movies, and I think that sexual violence is overrepresented in current media.
Mm-hmm.
Mo Ryan had that great article. It was about television because she's a TV critic, but, you know, rape as plot device or rape as character backstory as part of our current cultural zeitgeist, and it just being overused.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I don't want another movie defining a character through her attack made by men.
Right.
I did know that a man directed it and a man wrote it.
Right,
but,
right.
I think that that is being far too dismissive of it.
There's plenty of movies that are that. This is not that. That was great talking right there. I don't know how to get into it without at least admitting that this plays with like rape fantasy.
So I how much are we allowed to spoil here?
I don't know.
Okay.
Go to not how it wraps up, but.
Sure. I felt like.
Don't include the big reveal.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that it is more of an issue of consent fantasy.
Okay.
Right? She, takes, you know, she takes this, brutal attack, and it's that kind of, you know, what like evil senators would refer to as legitimate rape, right? Mm-hmm. You know, someone in a ski mask breaks into her home and beats her up and rapes her.
Right.
And she turns it into something that she can get sexual gratification out of.
Yeah.
And I think that, to me, it was about her taking it back and owning it in a way. And I do see why people would define it as rape fantasy, but I really felt like they succeeded in making it so much more than that.
And I think when we were talking on Facebook about this, you were like, you said something to the effect of, I can't wait to read lots of conflicted feminist interpretations of this film. And as this is one where I'm like, I'm a straight white guy. I don't really even get to have an opinion on this beyond like, that was a good movie. Like, that's about all I feel like I get to say. But I did walk out of there going, I cannot untangle the sexual politics of this movie.
Okay.
And that might be to its credit that this is like taking a hard thing and going in a direction that I feel a lot of filmmakers would be like, we can't make a movie about that.
Right. I think another thing about this movie that I liked is that it creates this, it's not just about the one attack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she is the victim of stalking.
Yeah.
And sexual harassment at work.
Mm-hmm.
She has this dark backstory going back to her childhood, which that is something that I found more difficult to unpack.
Right.
There were some also religious stuff going on that I'm not religious and I just was very confused by.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked the idea that it's pervasive, right? Like rape culture. It's not just this one attack and her response to it. It shows that it is a part of her life and by extension, all women's lives.
It's and she is pretty fantastic.
This is why I think she's going to win. She's just unbelievable. She's so magnetic and creates this fantastic character. One thing I really liked about this is there could be no rape in this movie, and I would still find it interesting.
I was about to say, one of the most interesting parts of this is she's got it's her son, right?
Yeah.
Her son has, like, kind of an awful girlfriend, and I don't mean that in, like, a stereotypical way. Like, this is just objectively an awful person.
Correct.
And she's pregnant, and they're going to have the baby, but this isn't a spoiler. The baby is clearly not his from the moment it's born.
And I remember that was something that I found oddly predictable.
Yeah.
And then when the baby's black.
Right.
And he's white. And I remember thinking like, oh, it's definitely not going to be his.
Yeah.
And how are they going to communicate that? It's going to have different skin color.
Right.
Yeah.
But then that's like this kind of like repeatedly fascinating, like every 12th scene is about that and how he's insisting that it's his son, like in a, I'm not willing to talk about the fact that this isn't my son way.
He wants to raise the child and he stays with this girlfriend who treats him badly because he wants to make his life mean something through being a good father.
Yeah. And like that was so good that I spent 6 hours one day when I was in like the flood of watching 2-3 movies a day.
Right.
I a couple weeks later, I was like, what was that movie with the subplot about the kid that wasn't his? And like, I could remember so many specifics of it, but couldn't remember it was from L, just because it was that memorable in a vacuum.
And then there's the other psychosexual element there where she, L, or Michelle, Isabelle Huppert's character, became friends with her best friend because they shared a room when she had her son and her best friend, Anna, gave birth to a child who died, or it was a stillbirth, and then nursed Michelle's son.
Yeah.
And it's just such a random psychosexual detail that they include.
Also, her mother is basically announcing her engagement to a gigolo.
That's correct.
There's so much going on in this movie that if you saw it four times, you would probably not get to unpack all of it. And it's one of the most uncomfortable movies that I would really heartily recommend. Right?
I completely agree. I think that if you are willing to, you know, buckle up and deal with what this movie is presenting to you, mm-hmm. I would absolutely recommend it.
So see that instead of The Founder, that's where like movie criticism gets absurd.
Right.
It's like, do you want a really, really difficult, challenging thing that's better than a thing that's also good-ish but completely innocuous?
That's up to you.
See whatever movie you want,
right,
man. So I have no idea how this show ends. Everything has happened out of order.
Right. We were originally going to talk about Founder and Al first and then talk about our general philosophy of movies. We did it completely out of order.
We did. Aaron's not here, so back up why he's wrong about Moonlight and I'm right, and then we'll go home.
So I watched Moonlight last night, and I loved it. I am surprised and impressed that it is getting as much attention as it is. It is a small movie. It is an intimate movie. You know, it is just a study of one character, and obviously there's some strong supporting characters in there, but it's really fixated on this one guy Chiron's story in a way that normally I think only film nerds would see and care about.
Yeah.
But I think that because it is a black gay character or queer character, it's unclear, It feels so much more revelatory.
Yeah, I had to be careful every time I was talking about Moonlight to be like, there's never been a movie like this before.
Right.
There definitely has. They just play at film festivals and then nowhere else.
Right.
These are stories that get told, but it's I don't even know now how it ended up that we all know about this movie.
I agree, and I'm so glad that we do. I'm
right.
So glad I saw this movie.
Right. And it happens, I mean, that's, you know, you attach to it because it's a beautiful small story,
right?
Brilliantly structured. I love having 40 minutes with 8-year-old Chiron,
right,
and 40 minutes with 15-year-old Chiron and 40 minutes with 21-year-old Chiron. That's great, but it happens to be the case that this is one where every performance is brilliant, where the direction is unbelievable.
It is literally beautiful to look at. And the sound, I love the music in this movie, and it just is immersive.
Yeah. I could have a conversation about the lighting. I could have a conversation about just the movement of the camera in this. Everything is perfectly done here.
Right.
And so remember when Aaron said it wasn't that good, he was wrong.
I agree. I don't know what his reasons were, but he was wrong.
It was one of those times when he just, now we're just bashing Aaron's opinion when he's not here. Well, it was one of those times when he was just like, eh.
And you know what? I think that, I guess he's entitled to that opinion, right? As a straight white guy, I can see him not necessarily connecting to it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are plenty of similar movies for straight white guys to enjoy.
Yes.
And I think that that is part of the reason why it's so great that Moonlight is getting attention, is that we don't see this story as often.
And I am going to take that as you telling me that I'm a better straight white guy than Aaron Kleiber. Thanks for listening, everybody. That's the closing note. Bye.
Thanks for listening to You Can't Handle the Truth. Find your hosts on Twitter
at Sean Collier, PGH,
and at Aaron Kleiber. That's Kleiber, Kleiber. And follow us at Epicast TV. Head to www.epicast.tv for more great podcasts on the Epicast Network. You can email feedback to handlethetruthpodcast@gmail.com.